This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's good to join you once again on a Wednesday. I love Wednesdays because I get to share some cool stories. And today is no different. Diana Hassel joins us on today's podcast to talk a little bit about her journey into the sport and exactly how she got to the Ironman World Championships on the Big Island of Hawaii. That's all coming up. A massive thank you as this episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by Low Carb High Fat Running. If you want to fuel on nothing but fat, you can get all the details on lowcarbhighfatrunning.com. Today's coach in the spotlight is Coach Stephen Brands, a Next Level Triathlon. They've proved their results year after year. Steve has personally guided athletes to an ITU Age Group World Championship, Ironman Hawaii, and has qualified over 20 athletes to the 70.3 World Championships. Steve isn't your traditional multi-sport coach. He's a full-time endurance coach who works with athletes remotely as well as athletes in a DTE in Madison, Wisconsin. Steve is also one of a few coaches in the USA High Performance Mentorship Coaching Program, where he gets to work with the select high performance athletes in the USAT CRP program. In 2015, Steve was selected to run a week-long Cam Tri Camp in Trinidad and Grenada, where he was responsible for working with their top athletes as well as educating their coaches on proper racing, training, and season preparation. Some of Steve's athletes have won an ITU Age Group World Championship, won multiple USAT Age Group National Championships, won USAT Duathlon National Championships, podiumed at the 2016 Ironman World Championships, have run sub-3-hour marathon during the Ironman, and qualified athletes to Ironman and 70.3 World Championships. If you'd like to find out more about Steve and Next Level Triathlon, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching or click through to nextleveltriathlon.org. All the details on that website. Okay, that's thekonaedge.com/coaching. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured here on the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to that exact webpage. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Listening to the Kona Edge, and we head to Fort Collins in Colorado now to catch up with Diana Hassel. Diana, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be here.
Diana, let's talk a little bit before we get into sort of some of your latest exploits, but your sort of entry into the sport and how you got into triathlon. Where did your journey begin from?
It started when I was in college in, actually, I think I was in my residency at UC Davis in California, so Davis, California. I used to swim masters, you know, just to, you know, keep some fitness, and I just got to know a lot of triathletes in the master swimming group that I was with, and you know, it's the home of Dave Scott, and Vern Scott, his dad, was one of the swimming coaches too. So it was just a nice environment where I am. So I just kind of started playing with it. I got a bike and found out I actually had some talent on the bike. And from there, I was in a PhD program, so I went ahead and rode for the UC Davis team early on. And that really got things going for me.
That's incredible. I mean, I know a good friend of mine's busy with his PhD program, and I know how much work that is. You obviously like keeping busy.
Yes, very much so. I'm very, very busy.
Tell me a little bit about sort of growing up. Were you pretty sporty growing up as a youngster?
You know, a little bit, but not really. I mean, I always tried to do something to keep fit, but I did a little bit of running in high school. In cross country and track. And then I had this pretty bad injury, I think my second year in high school. So I was kind of just a support crew until my senior year. And then I was able to run again. Yeah, nothing hardcore, just did a lot of aerobics and undergraduate, that type of thing. Occasional running, my hips used to ache, you know, so I really didn't get into serious training until probably my late 20s.
Are you amazed thinking back now, like what you've achieved in the sport of triathlon, thinking back to those days and how you, I mean, you say your hips were aching. It must be pretty amazing thinking, gee, how am I doing what I'm doing today if that's what it was like back then?
Yeah, it really is. I never would have imagined that. And to even be at the level that I've achieved as an age grouper anyway is well beyond what I would have ever expected at the time, for sure. Yeah.
Tell me about those early days with that squad around Dave Scott. I mean, those were the wild, wild west days of Ironman triathlon. It must have been exciting times.
Yeah. Well, Dave was gone when I was in Davis. He had already moved on. But we had Vern there, and it was just a really, it was a strong triathlon community in the, I guess it was the 90s. Yeah, I think 97, the end of 97 was my very first triathlon. So, it wasn't too that old of a day, old days, but, you know, but, there was, you know, it was getting popular at that point, but not like today for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, the sport has grown. I mean, that was two decades ago, and you look at the way the sport has grown to now. What do you think's driven that growth? I mean, it's around the world. It's not just in the States. It's pretty much everywhere.
As anyone who's done a triathlon could probably tell you, there's a very addictive quality to it once you get started. I feel like the first race for everyone kind of is what hooks people. And usually that's a sprint or something like that. And just the camaraderie of the sports and how everyone's just so friendly and encouraging. I think that is just, and it also encourages a healthy lifestyle. So all those things, I think, together just get people to, once they start, to not stop, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember your first one? What distance was it, and how did it go?
Oh, yeah, I do. It was a sprint. It was in Sacramento, called the Golden State Triathlon, and I had never run off the bike, so it was interesting, to say the least, but the swim, I remember having an Olympian in the swim in my age group at the time. So I think she did all butterfly, actually, just for fun for that race. And the bike was fine. I had a little Trek type of carbon fiber bike. I was really excited about it. And then I got it on a really good deal for $300 on some ad in a bike shop. And then I tried running, and I just about died. My legs were just felt completely like bricks, like a true brick session, where the word brick came from. Now my legs feel better off the bike, generally speaking, than just going out cold. So
the first one, it almost feels like someone swapped your legs out and they gave you someone else's legs in T2.
Yeah, it was tough. That 5K felt like a long way, for sure.
Were you hooked after that first one? Was it a case of you want to stick around, or was it, I'm not sure if I want to do that again, but then got talked into it?
Well, I definitely loved it, and I knew I needed to work on my running and running off the bike if I wanted to continue to do the triathlons, and that's what I did. I joined the running club in town in Davis, which was a really great group of people. Still going strong there, the Golden Valley Harriers. And so I was doing that. Went up and down through a lot of injuries because I would run twice a week, basically, and one would be a all-out speed session and the other would be kind of a long run without any background in it, really, for many years. So, it was kind of a rough start. But, I think I got things figured out by 2000, I think.
Tell me about when the long one, the Ironman distance, first came onto your radar, and the thought of possibly doing one of those crazy things.
Well, we went to Kona in 1999 to watch our friend Beth Zinken race, who was the top ranked U.S. athlete in the Ironman for pros that year. And we just... when I got in the water there, I thought there's no way I could ever do an Ironman because, maybe I could do the bike for sure. And then, but I don't know about the swim. I could never do 2.4 miles in the ocean. But when I got there and we swam, and, you know, with the buoyancy of the water, I thought to myself, wow, I think I could do this. So I set out to, I got a coach who was the best coach, and I set out to qualify that next year. And I had only done at the time an Olympic distance race as my longest event. And so that next year I entered the Vineman, half Vineman, which was a qualifier at the time, and ended up having a really good race. I ended up third, and it was a very competitive field. And there were two slots in my age group, and one person already had a slot. So it rolled down to me. And yeah, that was a very exciting day for me to get that slot and go to Kona in 2000.
I'm sure. Was Kona 2000 your first full Ironman distance triathlon?
Yeah, it was my first full Ironman. And I, to this day, have never done a marathon other than in Ironman. So it was my first marathon too.
That's incredible. Do you advise doing that from a, I mean, obviously at the moment with Ironman Corporation, it's the qualification, there are one or two races that are 70.3, particularly out east, and people are chasing those. Would you advise that, or knowing what you know now, do you think it's probably best to go and do a full before you head out to the Big Island?
No, I think it's fine to just do a half, and that's preferable. In fact, I hate the fact that we have to do two Ironmans a year now to qualify. Fortunately, since I won my age group this year, I don't have to do that this year. And for me, especially at my age, being a master's triathlete, you know, doing two Ironmans a year and the workload that I have at work makes it really challenging. So doing halves for me is far superior going into the Ironman. And I'm excited about next year for that reason. This year, I should say.
I was going to say, is that the strategy from here on out, is just make sure you win your age group every single year, then you only have to do one?
Yeah, I always have that strategy, but it doesn't work out every year. And I certainly try.
Dana, talk to me a little bit about life outside of triathlon. What does it look like generally? I mean, you work, you've got a pretty busy schedule. Tell us about what you do and how busy it keeps you.
Yeah, I have, I'm married, and we have a almost 17-year-old daughter now. I am an associate professor of equine emergency surgery and critical care at Colorado State University at the veterinary school. So that job entails a lot of hours. We do teaching, we do clinical service, so we're working on clinical patients much of the year, and then we do research as well. So I have to write grants and produce publications and things like that. And it's really my dream job. I love what I do, but it's certainly very time consuming, and I always have a very long list of incomplete items. So there's always stuff to do. But it's a lot of fun, and it's very challenging, much like triathlon.
How do you keep all the balls in the air?
Well, you just have to prioritize a little bit. And for me, that means getting up early in the mornings to get my training done. When I'm in full Ironman training, I'll usually do something in the evenings as well when I get home. And then I try to stack my on-call weeks, because I'm on call a lot because the nature of my work is emergency surgery. So I try to do a lot of the on-call work more in the off season than in the main part of the racing season. So that doesn't work out that much, but it helps a little bit if I probably do 60-40 in the off season versus the season for my on-call duty. Mm.
I was going to ask about that, because that is obviously a big challenge in what you do. A lot of athletes are pretty regimented the way they plan and organize their week. But as you say, with what you do for a living, there are times when you're on call, and most times these sort of things don't happen within office hours. They happen at all odd hours. Is it a case of you just have to be really flexible and roll with the punches?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have to be flexible. And I do a lot of work on the indoor trainer because of that. Is in terms of being on call, I have pretty limited as far as where I can ride and how far I can ride, and you lose phone reception pretty quick around here with the mountains and so forth. So I spend a lot of time on the indoor trainer, especially when I'm on call, but as little as I can when and during the week as well. I almost never ride outside during the week because I'm at work during all the daylight hours.
As far as what you're most proud of in what you've achieved in triathlon, what would you say that would be?
Let's see. That's a tough one. I would say, well, I'm pretty proud of this last event. So in Hawaii, because I've been working for 15 years to regain the top spot in my age group in Hawaii. My first time was in 2002, which was my third Ironman. And then I've been trying ever since, and I've been on the podium 11 times in total since 2000, but in Kona. But the first spot was always eluding me, and I finally got it this year. And it was only in the final mile where that happened. So it was pretty exciting.
Wow, that is incredible. What does it take? I mean, we chat to a lot of age groupers who have qualified and race and podium, but we don't get to chat to too many age group world champions. What does it take to win your age group on the Big Island?
For me, I think a really important part of it is really the training, of course, is important. Getting to the start line healthy is very important. But you can get away with, I found, not that many hours of training and still have a successful race based on if you have a good aerobic base to start with. And for me, mentally, in terms of the key, well, you have to really be good at suffering. And the other thing is really not focusing on your competition, but rather just focusing on yourself. And in fact, this year I told my husband and everyone to not tell me what position I was in until the final 3 miles of the marathon. And I think that really helped as far as, having the island gods on my side. So I'm not just racing against other people, but I'm just racing for myself.
So what did they tell you with 3 miles to go in 2017, and what did those last 3 miles look and feel like?
Well, I probably found out maybe a little before that, maybe 4 miles to go, because I couldn't stand it anymore. I had my friend Elizabeth Kenyon was ahead. She's won 9 times, I think, and has always beaten me at, well, not always, but if she has a good race, which she does most of the time, she usually beats me in Hawaii. And she was having a rough time with some heat stroke because it was a very hot day. And I found that out around mile 4, that she looked like she was not doing well. She's kind of running sideways and stopping and walking a lot. And so I had everyone encouraging me to just keep going, and that's what I did. I couldn't go any faster, but I could maintain my pace, and that was enough. And I caught her at the bottom of Palani Hill. She's awesome. I really like Elizabeth. I respect her very much. But I was pretty excited to finally get to that top spot again after all those years.
Yeah, we've chatted to Elizabeth here on the podcast as well. So we've got to hear her story, which is pretty cool. But tell me what that feels like, knowing that you passing someone almost within in sort of eye shot of the finish, and you are going to win that title after so long. I think winning it once is cool, but like you say, after 15 years of trying and trying and trying, and it finally happens, it must be an incredible feeling.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And I've been in the opposite spot on two occasions on Palani. So once losing the spot for first place to finish second, and another time when I was in third, I think, getting past there for fourth, right on Palani Hill. So I kind of, have a pretty good feeling of being on the other side of it, but yeah, it's nicer to be in the position where you're passing instead of being passed, that's for sure.
I'm sure. Let's talk about being good at suffering. I like suffering. It's one of my favorite things to do, and I think in order to be an Ironman, you have to be a bit of a masochist, but how do you get good at it?
I don't know. I think it's something that's internal to a person in terms of, I think it's easier to suffer more when you're in the lead or you're in the top group, in my experience, because you're really kind of racing for a podium spot. For me, that makes it a little easier to really put it all out there. Whereas if you're, for me, if I'm in 50th or something, which I have been in Hawaii, where I've had to walk the whole, most of the marathon, I just change my mindset and I kind of stop suffering and I enjoy the event and enjoy the volunteers and I have a good time if I know I'm not in contention, because you know, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to win or trying to at least get on the podium. And so I don't know, I've just always been good at suffering. I think, you know, through my years in bike racing, I started I started racing in 2000 and had a coach that would make me do these horrendous VO2 max intervals. And I think that's probably where my suffering started. And then of course you suffer a lot in bike races in a fun way. I enjoy it a lot. So I don't know. I think that's where I kind of got used to it and just kind of maintain that. I'm pretty competitive as well. So gotta have that little competitive spirit.
Yeah, have you always been competitive? I mean, growing up, have you got siblings? Was it, where did that competitive streak come from? Has it always been in you, or is it something you've developed?
I think I've always had a little bit of that in me. Going back to, you know, looking at my days racing cross country, I mean, I would put everything out there, you know, in those races. So I think that's a sign of having a competitive spirit. So, yeah, I think it's just something I've always had. And it's kind of with my career. I knew when I was 12, I was going to be a veterinarian and that never backed down on that. I knew I did exactly what it took to get there. And here I am. So I think that's just how I am naturally.
I love that. And as far as staying fresh in the sport and staying passionate, it's easy to have moments where you're training hard and as much as the race day is hard, the training often is what's really taxing. How do you stay sort of fresh and passionate and keeping wanting to do Ironman and the training it takes to be competitive?
Yeah, I've been through that in past years in terms of just really getting burned out, fatigued, not being excited about my workouts. And because of I have all these years of aerobic training, I actually don't do as many of the really long sessions anymore, which are the ones I think that can tax you. And I really have found I enjoy most of my training. It's pretty rare for me to feel that way anymore. And I think I attribute a lot of that to being really diligent about recovery practices. I think that's really the key, especially for the master's athlete, to do everything you can to recover as much as you can so you do feel good each day. Because, boy, one thing I dislike is doing a workout when I feel terrible. Mm. So I think that's the key is, you know, being fresh enough for your workouts that they're fun. They're fun to do and they're not just a horrible chore. And having good people around you that you can train with as well sometimes is very helpful. I do a lot of training by myself, but I also enjoy group rides and running with my husband. For example, today we ran and had a good time and pushed really hard. So
tell me about recovery. It's not something we chat about too often here on the podcast, but as you say, it's vital, particularly as you get older. And I'm finding that now where you don't bounce back as quickly as you did in your 20s, unfortunately. What are some of the things that you do to maximize your recovery?
Well, I probably do all the normal things that most people do in terms of massage and that type of thing. I get regular massages about twice a month in the winter, and when I'm lucky, even more frequent leading into Hawaii. But I think that's very important. But I think two of the more recent things that I've done that have made the most obvious impact for me in terms of recovery would be one is nutrition, particularly a supplement I take. It's a branched chain amino acid. It's called Platinum Power. So it's basically just glutamine and branched chain amino acids. I think that's helped me a lot. And then also I like the muscle stimulator. So I have the Compex muscle stimulator that I use on my hamstrings and quads. I think hamstrings and calves are major sources of problems for master athletes. And so I try to take care of those as much as I can. If I feel any tightness in my foot or calves or hamstrings, I immediately stretch it and take care of it and not risk, you know, having a major injury, which is unfortunately pretty common the older you get. So yeah, the muscle stimulation and then nutrition and my amino acid supplement, I think, are probably the two biggie things that at least two biggest things in the last few years that have made the biggest impact on recovery for me.
You've had some incredible races on the Big Island, obviously. What do you still want to achieve in the sport? What are some of the goals you're still chasing?
I haven't really thought about long-term goals, but my immediate goal is to defend my title in 2018. And I'm pretty excited about this year not having to do another Ironman, because that just really slows me down. being at the age I am after I finish an Ironman, it's such a long process to get my speed back. I'm excited to go into it with just a bunch of halves under my belt and give it my best.
Obviously, being the sort of type of person you are and setting your mind to thing and doing things, I'm guessing, aren't happy just stagnating. You're always working on things and trying to improve things. What's the plan for this season? What do you want to get better at this year?
That's great. I always need to I'm always trying new things for everything. I mean, for all three sports, but particularly running, because that's really been my weakness, because I'm often first off the bike in most places, not always, but in the majority of my races, I'll have a pretty solid bike split, and then the run is what determines where I end up. And so my running is, I'm not a natural runner, so I have to work pretty hard at it. So you know, I work on running form quite a bit and cadence and all the things. I took that Bobby McGee course and focus on a lot of those things. And then I also get a coach specifically for Ironman Hawaii each year, about 3 months before. And I tell her that I want to make my run better. So the focus is on, you know, really working on my run those last 3 months, which is really my main training for the Ironman. Mostly form type of things that I'm working on. In all the sports.
You've also mentioned coaching a couple of times in this chat, and it's something that you obviously have decided you take advice and you take help in this process. What's the thinking behind that? What do you look for in a coach? If someone's sitting on the fence and they're going, oh, you know what, I'm self-coaching at the moment, I'm considering, but is it worth the money? What advice would you give them? What do they need to look for in a coach? What do you look for in a coach? And what are some of the benefits that you've got out of having a coach?
Yeah, I think, I am a coach myself. I did the Ironman University, and I train just a small handful of people, because I just don't have time to do much more, but I really enjoy it. But I would never coach myself, because I feel like there's something different about having a coach that tells you what to do. And certainly I like, you know, a relationship where you provide feedback and can alter things based on how you're doing. And but the things that I look for in a coach, I'm actually pretty low maintenance in terms of, you know, what I need from a coach. I really need the workouts that work for me. And so I don't need to have all the details, and I do all my own metrics. So I'm watching, everything's entered on Training Peaks, and I look at my training stress scores, and I look at my overall fitness as it changes throughout the year, and I enter all my data. So I do that myself, but I like to have a coach that I know take me to the top. And for me, that's McKeely Jones, has been doing that for every person. Some people really need a lot of guidance, but with my background, and I don't need so much of that. I just kind of need, you know, the workouts that work for me, and I need to pay someone to do that, so I make sure I do it. So
I think it's helpful, just, you know, that you're paying someone to monitor.
You know, if it's free, then it's just not as not as important, I guess.
Absolutely. Dan, it's been great catching up here on the Code Air today. I look forward to talking about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for the next episode. Thanks for your time, and yeah, we look forward to following your progress to Kona 2018 and beyond.
All right. Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for listening. I got another cool iTunes review, and I love getting reviews. It really helps us sort of bump up in the rankings. Got one in from Dave N, saying concise, professional, and invaluable. Brad is a professional radio man podcaster, and it clearly shows in the Kona Edge. Very easy to listen to and packed with excellent, helpful advice. Dave, you, sir, are a legend. Thank you so much for your kind words. Much appreciated. And thank you for taking the time to leave us a review on the iTunes. It is massively, massively appreciated. I'll be back again tomorrow with another edition of the podcast. And a big thank you to the sponsor of this episode once again, lowcarbhighfatrunning.com. That's who brought it to you. If you'd like to find out more about fueling on fat, that's the website to get to. That's lowcarbhighfatrunning.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of The Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.